show that looks at Kansas City baseball's past, present, and future.
High fly ball. Motley going back to the track. No outs to go. The Royals have won the 1985 World Series.
Davis comes to the plate. Strike three called. It's over. They've done it. The Royals are World Series champions. The world champion Kansas City Royals.
This is the Kansas City Baseball Vault.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, welcome in to the Kansas City Baseball Vault, brought to you by Kelly's Westport Inn, a Baseball Prospectus affiliate. Folks, the season has officially ended. It was over for the Royals long, long ago, but it's officially now over for all of baseball, and the offseason has begun. But the man who takes no offseason is with me now to talk about all this offseason stuff ahead for the Royals, Michael Engel. Mike, how are you doing on this very fall-tastic evening?
Yeah, I think it's time for real. The fall's going to stick.
Yes.
We've said that the real time that we know. I think it's time for November 1st. It's fall. It's fall, and it's going to rain that way. So
yes, we don't have a choice.
Right. Yeah. As long as it doesn't snow anytime soon, I'm okay. I will live with it. So
indeed.
Yep, so yeah. Yeah. Good. Yeah. Decent. Busy.
Stuff and like here that. We are in the off season. Of course, the final bit of that season there was capped off by the Boston Red Sox winning the World Series in five games over the LA Dodgers, who have now lost two consecutive World Series. So that pretty much capped off. I mean, when you really think about it, if you were to just stand back and take a 50,000-foot overview of the season, a pretty boring one, to be honest, in the sense that, you know, that's trying to taking the huge one. If you just look at the season as a whole, there were lots of exciting things that happened within the season and exciting games in the playoffs and such. But from the standpoint of the Boston Red Sox were essentially the best team in baseball from day one, they finished with the best record. They cruised through the playoffs and cruised through the World Series. The LA Dodgers, you know, the NL wasn't as strong this year, but the Dodgers were always in the conversation for one of the better teams. They made the playoffs. They made the World Series last year, so I guess it shouldn't be a huge shock that they made the World Series again this year, and they end up losing to the Red Sox, who are the better team. So in all likelihood, the true World Series was the ALCS, where the Red Sox played the Houston Astros, which, and I still haven't looked this up, but I have to imagine one of the largest win totals for two teams. I mean, 211 wins between those two teams, which is pretty nuts.
It's pretty strong.
And Red Sox obviously came out on top, went to the World Series, and came out on top again. So they have now, this is their fourth World Series in the last 15 years, after so much was made of the curse for so long, and they finally broke it, and now they can't stop breaking it.
Right. Speaking of breaking it, did you see that at the World Series
parade? Oh, yeah.
Some dumbass threw a beer and hit the trophy. Like, why are you throwing beer?
What the hell?
World Series
a cold
parade.
Beer can.
Yeah, one, you're throwing beer.
Yeah, that's
two,
just bad.
Two, you're throwing it at a World Series parade. Three, you're throwing it in the direction of, like, the manager. Like, what? Are they just bored in Boston? Like, are tired of winning and they got to find another, they got to get the next high? Like,
yeah,
I'm going to win and get beat by a bike cop on the parade route.
My wife was like, was this a fan at this? And I was like, yeah. And she goes, like, of Boston? Like, it was an accident, right? They weren't trying to do it on purpose. I said, I don't think so, unless it was some sort of, subterfuge plot by a New York Yankees fan who decided to hoof it on Boston for the parade. On the off chance he'd set up close enough to hurl a beer can and damage the World Series trophy.
If so, outside I admire of, the commitment and mission accomplished.
Hat tip to that guy. But if that's not the case, then yeah, it was just a Boston overzealous Red Sox fan. But yeah, I'm talking about Boston fans being sick of winning. Well, stupid, yeah, but being sick of winning. I mean, think about, okay, so if you were my age, right? So I was born in 85, and if I lived in Boston, okay, I would have grown up from 85 to 2000 with essentially seeing just nothing, right? So like in the, as I was coming of age, it would have been the end of Larry Bird's career. The Celtics would have been, that era of the Celtics would have been on the decline, and the Celtics were not very good for a while. And then
no, like D. Brown was the best player. And he
not until they drafted Paul Pierce were they really any good, and that was late 90s. Yeah. And then even that, it took a while with Paul Pierce before they actually got to be a decent team. So, and then you had, you know, the Patriots who made the Super Bowl in 84 and lost, and then were just not very good after that. They made the Super Bowl again in 96, I guess, with Bill Parcells, but they lost that. And then, you know, the Red Sox, who were always pretty good, but had, you know, just the curse thing going on. And, you know, the Bruins, who they had a little curse of their own. And then the turn of the century happens. And since 2000, the Patriots have been to 8 Super Bowls and won 5 of them.
Right? That's stupid.
The Red That's Sox so have been to 4 World Series and won all of them. The Celtics have been to a NBA Finals and won. And the Bruins have been to a Stanley Cup Finals and won. All in the span of 18 years. It's just absurd.
That's a pretty good run.
I mean, I cannot think of a better run for any town.
For a city in 2 decades?
I mean, that's just nuts. Even if you went from 2000 to 2010, right? So just a decade. Then you still had 4 Super Bowl appearances by the Patriots, 3 victories, 3 World Series, and a NBA Finals title. And then I can't remember when the Bruins won, so it might have been outside of that. But that's just...
I think the Brewers were like 2014. I think it was more recently.
Later than 2010.
It's a hockey question beyond...
I claim to be no expert.
Who won hockey. Against... Yeah, Mighty Ducks versus Iceland. It's like all hockey.
That's the miracle on ice, right? The same thing? Might as well be.
Yeah.
So anyway, but enough.
Yeah, it's nice that something good happened to the
long-suffering Boston sports fans here. So, Well,
speaking of that, today it's November 1st, which is the 3-year anniversary of the Royals winning the World Series. So that's very cool.
They did not play the Red Sox on their way to winning the World Series, but I'm okay with that. Nope. They would have beaten them even if they did. So,
yep.
It's fate indeed. 3 years ago today, we were celebrating quite profusely, and it was awesome and fun and joyous. And today we are not doing that, but it's still the off season, and so the off season brings with it one thing that's universal for all of baseball, and that is hope, because that's all wiped now. So the Red Sox, it's in the history because they get to keep that trophy forever and ever and put it in their collection. Good for them. And now everyone's back to 0-0. So,
everybody's tied.
True. And the Royals, they've got an off season now where, you know, we talked about this all pretty much through all season, especially as we got towards the end of the season, where we said, okay, the Royals are going to start with playing these young players. They're going to get a picture one way or another about what their season is going to be like heading into 2019, or I'm sorry, what their roster is going to be like heading into 2019. Because we're going to find out a lot more about Adalberto Mondesi. We're going to find out a lot more about guys like Ryan O'Hearn, et cetera. So we know now, we don't know what kind of players are going to be, but we have a much better idea. And you can have a much better idea of what you need to focus on in terms of positions of need, et cetera. So that's kind of what we're going to talk about today. We're not going to get into player-specific detail because it's so early in the offseason. We'll probably do that, you know, in the next show as the quote-unquote hot stove starts to simmer a little bit more. But we'll just kind of look at Royals roster as it's constructed now at the end of the season and some of the contract stuff. There's been some contract movement and a few small moves for the Royals this week. So we're going to hash all out and say, here's what the Royals should concentrate on for the playoffs. So we'll start with the moves that happened. And there was a slight restructure to Willie Peralta's contract. What did they go down from, like $3 million to $2.25 million or something? How did that work?
Yeah, like they had an option that would have made it $3.25 million for the 2019 season. And they just kind of they changed it so that it's $2.25 million. And added a mutual option year for 2020 with a $1 million buyout. So it's the same amount of money. It's just they're deferring $1 million of it. And really, in 2020, there's like I don't know, $55 million committed to the Royals. I mean, you know, just there's some arbitration guys, but, you know, you can kick a million. $1 million is nothing on a buyout. So they're just kind of kicking it down to save a little bit extra this year. So, and if Peralta's good, he'll they have a mutual option for $7 million for 2020. He'll have to be pretty darn good to warrant that, and it's a mutual option, which, as has been documented plenty of times, generally does not get exercised by both parties.
No.
So, you know, usually if the team wants to exercise it, the player was good enough to test the market, and if the player wants to exercise it, they probably weren't good enough to test the market, so the team won't pick it up. So, you know.
Yep.
But, yeah, I mean, Peralta, he pitched well in some spots and not as well. You know, overall 3.67 ERA in just over 34 innings. He saved 14 games. He did strike out more than a batter per nine inning, but he also walked, you know, six batters per nine. So, you know, it's a mixed bag, but, you know, he showed some good stuff. Some good velocity coming out of the bullpen. I kind of thought he might be a trade candidate for something, just, you know, some toss in type of guy. Mm-hmm. Once he got into like August, but it never came around. But the Royals get an opportunity to start the year with him in the big leagues and, you know, see what he can do. And if that turns out that in July he's saved, you know, 18 games and has an ERA in the twos, well, they might get something of a decent value for him for, you know, committing $2 million in change this year. So, considering that bullpen is probably the main spot that they need to improve on, you know, you could do worse, and they've done worse. I mean, Justin Grimm pitched 2 months for the Royals. Brandon Maurer is still on the 40 man. So, I mean, you can definitely do a lot worse than Willie Peralta. So it's a decent deal. It makes sense for everybody. There's no risk involved. You're not blocking anybody. So it's very much a rebuilding team type of move. It's a, you know, not major, but there's nothing else happening. So Willie Peralta gets the headline.
Yeah. And that's precisely what I was going to say, is that, you know, if you're going to have Willie Peralta in your bullpen, you can certainly do worse. You can also do better, but it's, you know, it's a perfectly fine player who, you know, as long as you're not building your bullpen around him, then I'm okay with the move to have him on the roster as I was last year. And the fact that they, you know, got a little more wiggle room and put themselves in maybe a little bit better position. And like you said, who knows, maybe they can flip $2.25 million and turn that into somebody who, I don't know, is okay, I guess. I don't know. Worse. That's okay. It does. Yeah. It's a deal.
Yeah.
Or it's not a deal.
It's very low risk. Yeah, and if there's any reward to it, then,
hey,
you know, that's,
I mean, in baseball, in baseball terms, $2.25 million is nothing. So,
right.
Just like,
yeah,
it's not it even really a blip.
Yeah. And the Royals, their payroll is going to be much, much lower next year anyway. So, you know, we'll kind of get into that throughout this show, is like kind of the idea that they have really only five players committed to like true contracts this year. And the rest are guys who are just league minimum or a bunch of guys who are in their first year of arbitration. It's, you know, it's definitely a rebuilding team with a couple of high priced veterans, but for the most part, you know, you don't have a lot of money out there. There's not even a lot of buyouts. Like the last couple of years, Royals haven't been very good, but they've had a lot of buyout money. They've had, you know, Omar Infante's contract still running out. And, you know, you had to pay some cash here for, you know, different trades and whatnot. So they're in a decent spot for a team that is coming off of, you know, more than 100 losses. You know, who is going to be able to reload their draft and, you know, see some of their key players approaching double A. They're just kind of in that that limbo where they're waiting for everything to kind of gel together. And in the meantime, they're not going to spend a whole lot unless you're talking about Alex Gordon and Ian Kennedy and Danny Duffy.
It feels kind of like that 2008 to 2010 era where they knew these guys were coming. They knew they were going to be cheap. They didn't spend, Gilmesh was kind of it. I mean, they had Jose Guillen, who had a decent contract. Yeah. And I can't remember was Mike Jacobs. I can't remember how well he was paid. Probably okay.
I don't feel like it was a whole lot. It wasn't like
Jose Guillen was making, but.
No, not at all.
But, and so, you've got those guys with your Danny Duffy's and your Alex Gordon. And Duffy's a little bit different, but Gordon is kind of that older veteran guy who's probably not going to be around if this new wave materializes like they're hoping in the next couple of years. Gordon probably won't be around to see the true fruits of that labor.
No, I wouldn't expect it.
So it kind of feels like
it's
that
the last
because
year
then
of his deal. So.
And then as you were talking about, in a couple of years they could be back in that 2011 territory where that year the payroll was $35 million on opening day, and they could be close to that again, with all this young talent, and it could start to look really good. Specifically, someone, we talked in the last couple shows, we've talked about Adalberto Mondesi a lot and how he had such a strong finish to the season. And if he becomes a star, like he kind of was sort of looking like he shows the potential towards possibly materializing into, did I put enough qualifiers in there for that? I'm trying. Perhaps. Nice. I'm trying to hedge my bets on that one. But point being, if he does turn into a star, which is possible, then, that's going to look really good because he's going to be on a rookie contract. So,
for two more years.
Yeah.
It's very fortunate situation.
Yes, it is. Speaking of it, to draw a little tangent away, still with baseball, but away from the Royals, when talking about free agency and signing players and stuff on this season, this is going to be one of the more interesting free agent seasons in quite a while because your big headliners are Bryce Harper and Manny Machado, who, those guys are going to pull in crazy money. And it'll be really interesting to see, actually, because Bryce Harper had not even by his standards, just by like normal standards, he had actually just kind of a subpar to poor year offensively. So I think he kind of picked it up near the end, but he was struggling for a large part of the year and kind of damaged his stock a little bit. So I'm really curious to see how the Bryce Harper saga will play out in free agency, knowing, obviously he's league MVP. He was ordained a Hall of Famer from 16 years old, basically.
Right.
So, seeing him perform so poorly in a, quote unquote contract year and what that's going to mean for free agency, because it's so interesting because you think, okay, well, there's all these players that are going to have all this money, Harper, Trout, Machado, et cetera. So that immediately prices out like 90% of the league, right? There's like 4 to 6 teams that could actually afford to pay Bryce Harper what he's going to get paid. So, normally you think, okay, all it takes is one team to not care about a bad season or to not care about, an injury or whatever, and a player can start up their bidding potential a little bit. But when it's just a few teams who can actually afford the floor of what you're looking at, then it might be a little bit easier for that not to spiral out of control like it might if it was, if there were 20 teams in the race for a particular player. So it'll be interesting to see how that really plays out. And I'm curious for that. And then, Manny Machado, that'll be, just because he's a good player and it'll be interesting to see. He kind of struggled a little bit in the playoffs for the Dodgers. So I don't know if that'll have much of an impact, but we'll see, I guess. And then Clayton Kershaw could opt out. I haven't heard. I'm almost certain he will, but I haven't heard any official news.
Yeah.
Anything about that?
I think people expect him to try it because,
why wouldn't you?
He's still Clayton Kershaw.
Yeah. He's not going to get less than he was already making. So.
Yeah, I think he's got, 2 years? So it's like if you opt out now, you could get a 5-year deal for $30 million a year on average, or maybe even more than that. In 2 years, if you went on the traditional free agent market, would you be able to get that 5 years? Maybe not. Would you be able to get 3 years and $30 million? Maybe not. So he's probably all right to test it out after, you know, a decent run in the postseason. You know, especially in that NLCS, mm-hmm. he was pretty good in that. And he's Clayton Kershaw.
Yeah.
I mean, he's still considered the best pitcher in the game. So, you know, that's, believe it or not, teams will take notice of that.
Yeah.
So I think that's, he's interesting. I think he's probably going to opt out and, yeah, he'd probably go back to the Dodgers, but, you know.
Yeah.
It's still going to be that kind of money, and
it's still going to force
the
them
put
to
$30 million to him
to up there.
That's going
to
impact. Yeah, they still have to convince him, you know. And then if they do that, well, that probably takes them. Well, maybe takes them out of, say, going after Machado if they wanted to try to bring him back, or, you know, Dallas Keuchel is going to be out there. Patrick Corbin will be out there, so. They're not like the big, super huge names, but they're, you know, significant arms. So, you know, that means that it's Kershaw or they have to kind of outbid other guys mm-hmm. for those other Cy Young caliber guys who might not be Kershaw, but plenty good.
Yeah. I mean, so, Keuchel's a Cy Young winner, isn't he?
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
Yep.
You take that, yeah.
I would live with it.
Well,
yeah,
I didn't mean you specifically, but you, the royal you, if you will.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
So, yeah, just kind of wanted to throw that out there because this is going to be one of the most interesting free agent off seasons, kind of in recent memory, with all these big players and.
For baseball, not the Royals, though.
Yeah, definitely not the Royals, because the Royals are not in the running on any of these guys, nor should they be. So I'm, the Royals will not be involved. This is a strictly non-Royal, just interesting for baseball as a whole
yeah.
to see where all that happens, especially if there's, you know, some shakeups in these players. The most boring thing, of course, would be what you laid out, which is the Dodgers end up signing Kershaw again and they find a way to get Machado back. And then Bryce Harper will not re-sign with the Nationals, though. So he's going to go somewhere different. So that'll be fun to see where he ends up.
Probably the Cubs.
That'd be interesting. As if they needed more firepower in their lineup, but
right, yeah. Yeah. Here's Chris Bryant and Bryce Harper and Anthony Rizzo and Javi Baez and
Yeah. The list goes on.
So, yeah.
Anyway, to pivot back to the Royals as we look towards there was the Alberto Mondesi discussion that got me thinking about Manny Machado. Just because they play the same position, that's all. Or I guess the same side of the infield. I guess Machado doesn't play. I guess he
played a little bit,
yeah.
but
yeah, he came up as a shortstop and then shifted over to third. So,
yeah,
but so
I guess theoretically Escobar did to an extent too this year. So
true.
They are basically the same.
There you go. So yeah, it's. The Royals could find themselves in a pretty interesting position, and now that they have they've shown a willingness to spend money, it'll be interesting to see if they try and capitalize sooner on some things where, you know, the 2013 Royals, even though that season turned out to be pretty good and they had a, you know, they made the trade for James Shields and everything that season, maybe if 2013 repeats itself in 2020 or 2021 or something, maybe then they have they're a little bit faster to pull the trigger on making some bigger free agent signings in order to try and speed up this process a little bit. Who knows?
Yeah.
But that's down the road. So when you look at the roster now, what do you see as, we'll just start with the biggest number one hole for them right now, that if they're just position wise, we're not necessarily players or anything, but position wise, who do you think they should target, or what do you think they should target going into this offseason?
I mean, I would say pitching. They got by quite a lot, you know, with a lot of rookie pitchers who held their own last year. Thinking of like Heath Fillmeyer and Brad Keller, and I think Brad Keller's got staying power, but I wouldn't be surprised to see, you know, some regression, some kind of a bounce back, you know, to kind of be a little more typical of a 23-year-old, second year pitcher. You know, those guys generally don't come out and have a 3.08 ERA like Keller did. So I could see him, you know, you can't pencil him in for a 3 ERA. You can't. You've seen that he can do it. It's possible, but you can't sit there and say that, okay, he's going to do it. Junis had a good year for the most part, with the exception of a couple of weeks. But again, you know, he's always been kind of a profiled as a 3 at best, and probably more of like a pretty good 4. Definitely was hurt and ineffective at a lot of times. Kennedy was hurt and ineffective at a lot of times. So pitching's really going to be it, especially when they don't have a lot of those top guys, Brady Singers, Jackson Cower, I'm forgetting all their draft class right now. But those aren't quite there yet. So, you know, you're looking at that 6 starts from Burt Smith last year. They got 13 from Eric Skoglund, who pitched pretty well in some of them and not very well in some. Jorge Lopez was very hit or miss. He was either very, very good or not that good. So there's a lot of those, like, 4A type of arms that they're going to be getting by with. They might take a look at, you know, trying some of those guys maybe in the bullpen. They might try to we kind of talked about this very briefly in the Slack chat earlier today, even, or at least type it up. I don't know if we talked much about it, but like James Shields is out there. Irvin Santana is out there. You know, could those guys be signed together for $5 million a year? Maybe. Could they give you 180 innings? Probably. You could probably live with that. Does that take away the opportunity? 30, 60 starts from other rookies that you want to see? Yeah. So is that something the Royals would do? I don't know. So I maybe starting pitching is something to worry about. Maybe it's not. I think the bullpen definitely was very tough last year, because it wasn't just that, okay, Brandon Maurer got lit up and Blaine Boyer got lit up and Justin Grimm got lit up and so on and so forth. It was also that, like, if you can't rely on those guys, then you have to push them into that mop-up duty. And now you have to rely on, you know, Jason Adam, who got figured out at a certain point. And you call up Jake Newberry, and, you know, he was passable. You try out Andy Romero, and he gets shelled. And, you know, you try all different guys out of the bullpen. Poor Tim Hill had to pitch in 70 games. He only logged 45 innings. So you're kind of just, you're using all these different guys out of the bullpen. Nobody's really able to establish them very, very simply. There was never any real structure to the bullpen, so it was a matter of guessing, you know, who was good that week. All right, well, let's say them as setup. Nope, that didn't work. Okay, well, let's try the next guy. So I think it'd be interesting to see them get some of those veteran relievers in there. I guess they tried that with Boyer. They tried that with Grimm and whatnot. So they just didn't hit. So I think more of that will probably happen, where they're trying to find some of those guys in the bullpen. Veteran arms, try them out. $2 million deal with incentives. Let's see what they can do. If they can give you 60 appearances of, you know, competent pitching, then you consider that a win. You know, or dudes, you know, guys you find on minor league deals, you know, maybe that works out. So I think that's going to be the biggest thing that they look at. Because really, when you look at on the position player side of things, they've got a ton of outfielders. You know, between Gordon, who's going nowhere this year, had a decent year, should win a gold glove this year. Brian Goodwin, who played well when he came up. Brett Phillips, who was, you know, of course, a significant acquisition. Rosel Herrera, they played Merrifield in the outfield. Jorge Bonifacio was there in the second half. They got a lot of guys who can play in the outfield, and they have a lot of guys who they would want to see in the outfield. So they're probably not going to go out after any outfielders. You got Merrifield and Mondesi in the middle infield. That's fine. They're probably going to try to see if they can get 150 games out of each of them. Sal's behind the plate as usual. O'Hearn popped up. He should probably play first from opening day on, unless he really struggles. So you might maybe see a utility guy that they go after if they don't want to use Rosel Herrera there. Maybe a third baseman if they don't want to put Hunter Dozier there, but he's probably get first shot at it. So on the position player side, I don't know that they're going to do a whole lot at all. They've even got like Nicky Lopez in the minors if they wanted to try that. You know, they'd be able to give him a shot. Jorge Soler should be healthy, and he'll probably be your DH. They've still got Chesler Cuthbert, who's arbitration eligible. So they're pretty much set on guys who are in their 20s who could play, you know, anywhere around the diamond. They don't really have to go out and look for those guys unless there's some kind of bargain out there that falls in their lap and they could use them as a trade chip. That's probably the only thing that they would look at, because otherwise you're going to be able to play all of those guys that you feel good about who played so well in September and were so fun to watch. You can start the year with those guys. And we talked about that two shows ago or last show about, hey, what would happen if the Royals did that? And, you know, I figured that's probably a team that's 10 wins better than the team that started in 2018. So I don't think they're going to do a whole lot position wise, but I would say they're probably going to try to find whatever veteran pitching bargains they can, just so they don't have to run every single arm ragged out there in the bullpen and in the rotation. You know, they can kind of allow guys to work on things a little bit more, and they don't have to, you know, put poor Heath Philmeyer, who pitched well, but he got kind of thrown into it a few times where it's like, all right, you're who we have because Kennedy and Duffy are hurt. So going out there. So I think it's mostly going to be pitching. Maybe some veteran utility guy, but I don't know they really need to. You know, I think they can focus on pitching and kind of see what happens there. And if it's a bunch of 1-year deals, then hey, in July, that could be a lot of fun.
Yeah. And, you know, I think what you said about, you know, guys like Ryan O'Hearn, I mean, I think O'Hearn gets the job until he proves that he doesn't get the job. You know, I mean, he's earned, yeah. He performed well enough down the stretch that he's definitely earned the to be, you know, essentially the front runner for the, not essentially, but to be the front runner and essentially handed the job just because there's not much else there at first base. So, you know, if he blows up in your face and he's hitting 150 come June or whatever, then okay, you know, you cut your losses. But right now, he's definitely proved that he deserves that shot and an extended look. And then, yeah, you know, they can kind of just fill in the rest in terms of position players, and they've got answers. You know, they may not be all-stars, and they may not be, you know, the exciting crop of players that we're waiting on, but they're players that, you know, and especially a lot of them that you mentioned, a lot of them being, you know, 20 something players ready to fill those roles. And that's absolutely right. But at the same time, some of them, you know, when you look at like a Chesler Cuthbert, like he's got a good amount of experience. You know, he's not, again, not an all-star, but he's proven he can play at the major league level. He can be a competent player for, if not a full season, you know, for an extended period of time. And there's value in that. And so, yeah, I mean, they're probably okay. They might make a couple, you know, if there's some people out there that, okay, you know, this is too good to pass up in terms of it's, you know, a player who's cheap and could help, you know, whatever, then might not be, they might make a move like that. But yeah, pitching is, I mean, they call it the currency of baseball for a reason. And it seems like, you know, that it does feel like they're probably not, like the Royals pitching was that great last year, but with the great pieces that they had, there could be some regression for sure. You know, with when you talk about Keller and you mentioned Junis and Philmeyer, et cetera, you know, those, they had their ups and downs, but at the same time, you know, when they were good, they were really good. And it could be something where they've been figured out to the point where they don't get to have those really good patches anymore. I don't know. We're going to find out what kind of player those players are and whether or not they can, you know, adapt to everyone else adapting to them. Which you know, the people that end up being good players in the league, that's what they do. So we'll see on that. But it's like you said, and you encapsulated it perfectly. It's just not something you can depend on from how they did last year, because we just don't know. you know, 2 years from now, if they have two more seasons like they did last year, definitely. Then we can say, okay, we can depend on this from them. And, you know, if you get a bad season, it happens all the time. But, you know, right now, they're not in that place. And the new wave of pitchers is exciting, but yeah, just not quite here yet. So
yeah, till they're there, we've been burned by that before, where, you know, between that 2011 group where, you know, Odorizzi turned into something, but it wasn't with the Royals, and Mike Montgomery was something, but it was 4 years later and also not with the Royals, and Duffy had his ups and downs, and, you know, that was kind of all that came out of that group.
Yep.
So, I mean, it's we make fun of the phrase, you got to have 10 to get one. And, yeah, I think that's still a silly statement, but, you know, the idea behind it is that all of your, if you have five top pitching prospects, you don't know that any of them are going to turn into anything.
What's the acronym, 10 stop or whatever? There's no such thing as a pitching prospect.
It's true. Yep. I mean, it's so easy for one injury to just throw a guy entirely off. And, you know, if someone you take in the first round, like, for instance, like Luke Hochaver, you know, first round, first overall pick. He was a first round pick twice in his career. You know, celebrated coming out of Tennessee. Never really got it going, you know. Took a conversion into the bullpen, and even then he still had some injuries to kind of fight off. And the Royals got something out of him, and that counts as a win. You know, he wasn't Clayton Kershaw. He didn't win a bunch of Cy Young awards. But he made it to the majors, and he pitched well in a couple of years and helped them get into the playoffs and helped them win the World Series. And, like, you take his, what, 4.5 career ERA, and you call that a win. And that's from your first overall guy. It's just, it's hard to develop pitching sometimes.
And baseball, you know, feels really. Sorry, go ahead.
No, you go ahead.
I'll just, baseball, it feels, it's weird in that, unlike other sports, I think, or maybe to a greater degree than other sports, it's so much easier for players to hit walls, right? Like, you can have a player who you draft right out of high school, they blew away the competition, and then maybe they go into rookie league and they're, you know, awesome, and they go to low A and they're awesome, and they get to high A and they just fizzle out and they're nothing. You know, like Royals had, you know, like Tim Melville, you know, was a guy like that who was really, and he was pretty well heralded back in the day. And, you know, some of it might have been Royals developmental issues at the time, but, you know, he just kind of fizzled out in the early minors. And that stuff happens all the time. And sometimes it's low A, sometimes it's double A, sometimes it's triple A, sometimes it's the majors. But it's just kind of weird how, you know, that term 4A player, it's kind of a weird conceptual idea, but it's just like, there's that much of a jump between all the levels that it's possible that, you know, you can be the best at the bottom level, but you know, the next level that you go up, you can't cut it. It's what's it called in business? It's called like the Phillips principle or something, where you rise to your level of incompetence. So yeah, similar type thing.
Yeah, it's that kind of thing.
I feel like that's way more apparent in baseball than in other sports. You know, like I feel like if you're a good college football player, you know, if you get drafted, then you don't always make it. They definitely have their fair share of busts and such, but, you know, it's the divide isn't quite as large, you know, whereas if you can, you know, you can get drafted as a, you know, a one and done college basketball player and come into the league at 19 years old, and maybe you struggle, and maybe you never really amount to anything, but you can, you know, you're going to have good moments and show you belong. That happens a lot of times, you know, there's always exceptions both ways, but with baseball, you know, it's possible to be drafted and to just never make it past double A. And it's kind of crazy when you really think about it like that.
Well, Bubba Starling is someone who's probably on the roster bubble starting this year. And this is someone who was, you know, just crazy athletic talent. You know, was touted by everybody. Of course, the risk was very high, And we see now, after, you know, years and years of him struggling and, you know, really not being that close to the majors. I mean, he's made it to AAA. He's probably been in that cup of coffee territory, but struggles, injuries, just limitations, those kind of things pop up. And it's very easy for, like you said, they hit a wall. You know, there's a lot of players out there, and there's a lot of them that just, they don't have quite that third pitch, maybe. Maybe the velocity at 90, 91 is good enough to get them to double A, but once you get there, you're facing the guys who survived and got past the best in high A, who are succeeding against the best of low A and so on. And so it's like, I don't know, it's like bacteria spawning. It's like the best and strongest just move on. And, it's very easy for guys to just filter out and they don't come around. So, yeah.
And it's interesting because everyone of all skill levels starts at the same place, right? So, you know, there are obviously exceptions, but for the most part, every player drafted college, high school, no matter how good, how bad, whatever, is going to start in low A. You know, occasionally you'll find someone who's just a college player and so advanced, maybe they go start out in high A or something. Or you sign a Cuban player who's a little bit older or a player from Japan or something, and they'll start in double A. Okay, those are exceptions. But it's just kind of weird. It's like, social experiment type, or not social experiment, but those things that they do to try and teach kids, like social I don't know what the right word is, but where they'll say, you know, okay, everyone start at the line, and then, okay, if you're this, then take a step forward. And then if you're this, take a step forward. And eventually, so it's like, you know, certain people to start the race have a head start, but they're still, you know, say, I don't know if I'm explaining this right, but it's kind of an interesting dynamic when everyone starts at the same place, but then you just, you know, eventually,
yeah,
it all kind of,
a slight difference allows this or that. I'm thinking of a story that's in Outliers by Malcolm Gladwell, where they looked at like youth hockey teams in, I don't know, Toronto or something. And like, they found that like the all-star teams, like 70% of the kids who made those teams were all born in the same month. And they figured out that it's something where like they get into like their, I'm going to mess up the example, but it's basically that like they're getting a little extra training earlier. And by the time you might have someone who is 10 years old and they might be in the same grade, but this guy was born 3 months earlier. And so he was able to go into this league a year earlier. So he has the benefit of that. And that stuff compounds on itself. So by the time you're in year three, he's far and away better than someone who's literally in the same classroom as he is.
That's interesting.
On top of, you know, just your talent differences. And, you know, that's just that isolated example. But yeah, I mean, it's what you're saying. It's like, you know, those small differences, you know, you might have two guys who are the same level of talent, but they get a little bit different instruction, development, something clicks right for him.
Well, and we talked about, you talked about Bubba Starling, bringing him up. He was 19 when he was drafted straight out of high school. And he was someone who was a three sports star. He didn't play baseball as much as everyone else. So just from a, you know, specific rep standpoint, and the fact that, you know, he was older, starting in a position where, you know, someone like Bryce Harper, when he was drafted at 16, or seven, however old he was, you know, it's exactly what you're talking about.
Or in that same draft, Francisco Lindor was 17 when he was drafted. You know, they're drafted in the same time, but the advancement that Lindor had from 17 to 19, I mean, just that alone, it's like he was 17 years old and almost 18. I mean, he had just turned 17, but I mean, he was young for the draft. And by the time he was Bubba Starling's age, he'd already had more than a year of experience in a professional baseball organization, plus his talent. And that you know, the growth that you can make in those kind of areas, if you're talented and work hard, it's pretty significant. So
especially, and
you know, you run into that.
Yeah, especially. And when we talked about, I remember it was Jason Parks who brought this up back when we had him on the show. He was still for Baseball Prospectus, talking about how, you know, the particular cognitive development that allows you to hit a baseball that is moving towards you at a really fast rate of speed
in 0.4 milliseconds,
yeah,
or whatever.
That
it is.
Very specific development happens at a very specific age, and it's usually those kind of high school teen years, that 16 to 20 ish year. So, and we were talking about this specifically in relative to Bubba Starling, where he was saying the kid's got all the talent in the world, but this was his concern, his meaning Jason Park's concern, when talking about Bubba Starling, was that, you know, he saw some issues with that cognitive development and felt it might prevent him from reaching his fullest potential. Turned out to be right. But, you know, it's interesting because when when Bubba Starling is in that age, he's probably not thinking too hard about all that kind of stuff. But at the same time, you know, that's the reality. And when he is playing all those other sports, and other kids like Francisco Lindor are, you know, just taking more reps in the batting cage and doing more things to get better at the one sport, you know, I'm an advocate for playing multiple sports, but there is a reality when you're talking about playing at that level, that losing those specific reps at those specific times can be very detrimental, in a way that, you know, maybe they couldn't in other sports.
Yeah, I mean, how many fewer pitches did he see because he was doing track or, you know, football or basketball? I'm in the same boat. I think that if they can play other sports, they should probably play other sports. But
baseball is,
you know, just it shows that talent is not enough. Mm-hmm. You know, the tools are not everything. They will carry you so far, but there is a lot of other stuff that has to happen too. So, you know, that's kind of where. To try to bring it back. I don't remember how we got here.
Yeah.
Like, you know, the Brady Singers and such, you know, they're high level prospects and they're highly regarded and they were higher draft picks, but that doesn't mean they're guaranteed for success, because those guys drop out all the time. Mm-hmm. And so for the Royals for this year, those guys aren't ready yet in those lower levels. You're not sure about who you've got going into 2019. You saw flashes in 2018, but you don't know how that's going to carry over to 2019. And so, yeah, that makes the pitching staff probably their biggest concern, their biggest opportunity. Maybe they're comfortable with letting those guys sink or swim and seeing what you have, because you don't expect anything from Heath Fehlmeyer. So if he flames out, by the time you figure that out, maybe Brady Singer's ready to take a spot. I don't know. They don't seem to approach it that way usually, but, you know, I think that's maybe a consideration that could pop up. I don't know, but, you know, I would expect them to look at pitching primarily, and that's probably the spot that makes the most sense, considering they don't have ready-made replacements and the guys who are there are, you know, speculative. So, like, they'll be active at least on that side of it.
Indeed. So, I guess we'll kind of end with this thought here. What, just from a positional standpoint, again, not talking about any specific players quite yet, but what's your dream for the Royals offseason? Because they are in kind of a weird place where you can't just be like, oh, I want them to go sign a, you know, top, you know, an ace,
Bryce
an
Harper.
Ace starting pitcher, because it's not going to do them any good to have the 2019 Royals won't benefit as much from an ace starting pitcher as hopefully the 2021 Royals will. So, you know, what would your dream be for the Royals this coming offseason here?
You know, I don't even really know. It's such a unique and weird kind of formulation. I mean, I was just kind of looking at the potential lineup and potential, like, you know, big league position player roster. And, like, You've got Sal Perez making about $11 million. You've got Alex Gordon making $20 million. You've got Jorge Soler, who's making, he's going to make about $4.7 million. Everybody else you might have is making league minimum or close to arbitration. Like, that's including Whit Merrifield and Brian Goodwin. You know, even someone like you know, Mondesi, who's played a chunk here and there, he's still, you know, those guys are going to make like $550,000-$600,000 a year. It's a very inexpensive lineup when you kind of overlook Gordon and Salvi. So they're in a spot where they kind of have guys they want to take a look at, and they have very little financial investment in them. It's almost like free rolling. It's like you can use some of that money to try in other spots. Maybe they'll see some extensions. I mean, if they believe in a guy like Mondesi, they really feel like he's for real. You know, while he does have some time before he's looking at arbitration, you can set up, you know, if you give him 2 years, let's say he has 2 years and he's hitting 25 homers and stealing 50 plus bases and he's hitting 280 and eye popping highlights at shortstop. Well, in 2021, when he hits arbitration, that might be pretty expensive. Mm-hmm. You're at 2022, 2023, you know, two more years of arbitration for him. You might want to take a look at some kind of extension so that, you know, let's say we offer him 6-7 years now and you shore up, you know exactly what you're going to pay him in 2021, 2022, 2023. You know, that way you're not going to be surprised when he comes in with a $15 million figure in his last year of arbitration saying, this is what I want. And now you've got to have that difficult conversation to try to not pay him that. You know, I think that's maybe something they would look at. It's not without its risks, but I think that'd be, you know, pretty interesting. I don't know. I mean, I don't know that there's another candidate for that kind of thing. Merrifield maybe, but his age mm-hmm. does definitely put him into the spot where you're like, okay, well, do we really want to like be locking up his early 30s, his early to mid 30s? Maybe not. I mean, the Alex Gordon warning applies. You know, Gordon,
yes,
who's a freak of athletic and physical fitness, is just, you know, fell off as soon as they signed him. And you would not have figured that he would have fallen so much. So, I don't know. I think a Mondesi extension would make some sense. You know, we've seen them before with, you know, Sal Perez obviously is like the very early example where he had a couple months of experience when they signed him. But, you know, Yordano Ventura had just a couple years of success and they went ahead and gave him an extension too. So, I think it's probably something they would definitely look at. To set themselves up down the road, you know, with somebody that they believe in. But I don't know if there's like a dream scenario out there. I guess I brought up the Shields and the Santana, and I kind of just want to see that just for the heck of it.
Just for the grins.
It'd be fun to see them. Yeah, I mean, pretty much. I mean, when you look at, you know, Jason Hamill won't be back. Birch Smith probably won't be back. Right there, that's 24 starts between those two. And, you know, about 200 innings. So you could definitely find a way to fit somebody in like that. Plus, there's the fringe benefit of you add two veterans who are somewhat familiar with most of your organization and maybe even has worked with some of these guys who have come up at various levels because, you know, Santana and Shields were both part of that 2013 team. Mm-hmm. Shields, of course, was here in 2014. So I don't know. I mean, I still don't expect the Royals to be much more than like a 70-win team. You know, that's maybe best case just because there are a lot of holes. The pitching's probably not going to be that great, and you're going to be relying on a lot of rookie-type players. But there's a lot of interesting guys, and there's not really – it's not like last year where I really wanted to try to see if – you know, guys like Logan Morrison was one of the guys I really wanted to get. I wanted to get Gerard Dyson back. I wanted to get this guy and that guy because that position really didn't have an easy candidate. for the Royals going into last year. This year they do, so they don't really have to worry about that. Now, if those guys falter, well, then, yeah, you're kind of in a tough spot. But, you know, in some cases, someone like O'Hearn, someone like Dozier, those are guys that you didn't really have many expectations going into last year. So if they fail, it's not like you're crushing your long-term plan. It's like it's not the same impact as if Mondesi had hit 220 again this year and showed zero growth versus the meteoric growth that he showed. That would be even worse because, I mean, it's like these guys you kind of had forgotten about a little bit. If they don't pan out, whatever. But with someone like Mondesi that you still have hopes for, yeah, that would be difficult. So I don't know. I don't have like a roadmap or anything. You know, I think it'd be interesting. I don't even think I'd advocate yet for a Mondesi extension, but I think that might be one of the things that they think about and maybe look at. If they feel good about Jorge Soler, maybe something with him to, you know, add a year or two that they might be able to keep him around. I don't know. I mean, they've got some flexibility if they wanted to go out and try to acquire guys. You know, I don't know that they have much of a trade market for anybody other than maybe Whit Merrifield. So I don't know that they're, it might be a really, really boring offseason, but I think I'll take that after a really interesting September and a pretty intriguing returning team. You know, it doesn't have to be the fireworks of 2012's offseason where, you know what, they brought Guthrie back and they traded for Santana and then they traded for Shields and Davis. And it was like the whole winter was spent wondering where Will Myers was going to end up. It's not like the same situation no. right now. And I, you know, I think if they're going to trade Merrifield, this is the offseason to do it. I don't think they're going to do it. I don't know that they should do it. I don't know. I mean, it depends on what you'd get. If you were able to get like two top 50 guys, top 50 overall prospects, sure. But, you know, I don't know if that's going to be out there.
Yeah.
If it's like a top 100 guy and some good depth with some upside, okay, maybe, but, you know, I don't know. I don't know if that deal is going to be there, so I'm not as, like, not as concerned about that. But I'm sure it will come up. I'm sure rumors will pop up, especially around the winter meetings. I'm sure there will be plenty of articles at BP Kansas City and at other spots talking about why you should or should not trade Merrifield, plus responses to rumors. So, I mean, that's what winter's for.
Yes.
Rumors and fun and blocking fake accounts.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to see if they gave someone like Mondesi that Salvador Perez treatment where they just locked him up because they thought they had something. I think they'll probably wait on that at least one more season, especially because you're definitely like, you can't say that from a performance standpoint, the Salvador Perez contract was at all bad, because it absolutely was not. It was a huge steal. And I mean, he ended up being World Series MVP. So you literally cannot ask for anything more from a contract,
right.
But I still don't think it turned out the way they wanted it to, just because what I mean by that, I mean, there were a lot of issues with it. There was, you know, it actually got to the point where more from the national media, I think the Royals kind of got a little bit of bad press because it was almost at some points played kind of like the Royals were taking advantage of Salvador Perez at such a young age by essentially giving him an offer that he couldn't refuse, you know, as a 22-year-old,
right.
Knowing that he would likely well outperform it, which he did. And, you know, they did the right thing and they restructured it and they gave him more money that he, you know, deserved. While at the same time, he's still probably right now he's probably about right. But, you know, the first year or two, he probably outperformed that even still. So just in terms of value overall. But so I think the Royals, I don't know, they might just kind of want to avoid a mess like that. at least for now. But yeah, if Mondesi ends up being, you know, like what you said, then if they can lock him up sooner rather than later, then that's only going to do them lots of favors. So, but for me, I mean,
and they can wait a year too.
Yeah, I mean, they've got plenty of time for him.
They got 2 years where he's still at that league minimum before they have to worry about it. So it's like, you know, if you want to give him another year to prove it, they can take that time.
Sure.
It's not that big a deal.
And, you know, as far as me, man, for a dream, I'm kind of like where you are. It's hard because of the position that they're in to really think of a dream scenario of what could happen. Cause there's, I mean, short of, you know, spending $200 million and just buying just an unbelievable amount of free agents, there's nothing that the Royals can do that are going to make them a playoff contender next year. The only thing that could do it is to, you know, have essentially just a lot of luck where they were like the Twins a couple of years back who just kind of come out of nowhere and then things fall their way. And kind of like the 2003 Royals, but to an even greater degree where like, how are they doing this? I don't know, but we're going to ride this wave and it ends up going the whole season. And you know, that's the only way that I see them truly competing to for any sort of a playoff spot. But it's nothing that they can do outside of just things happening. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. There's nothing they can actively do. I mean, I suppose if they went and signed James Shields and Irvin Santana, like you said, and those two had a rebirth into Cy Young type candidate pitchers, which, you know, won't happen. But if it did, you know, again, that's, I guess, something that they could technically, they would have done that caused it. But yeah, it's tough. So it's hard to see something like that, but it, you know, in terms of building towards the future, I agree that I would love to see Shields and Santana come back because it, you know, in all likelihood, depending on, I mean, if it was just a 1 year contract, then maybe not. But you know, if they sign them to both to 2 year, $10, $15 million contracts apiece, you know, that's not that big of a deal. And they might end their careers as Royals. You know, who knows? Irvin Santana, maybe. How old is he? I'm not even sure how old he is.
I don't know.
Because Shields is like 35-ish.
He's definitely towards the end of the line. He would definitely be in retirement range.
And the Royals could probably get him with a 2-year contract because I don't know that any other team would offer him more than 1 year.
It's pretty true.
I mean, he's at that kind of 1 year at a time rare point in his career right now. So, but yeah, that would be a lot of fun to see them back. And you know, they're how many times did we hear it? Not only when Shields was here, but then even after he left, about how valuable he was to not just as, you know, it's just kind of posturing when it's the Royals talking about stuff. Well, we want James Shields here for this reason, because you never really know. But when you heard the actual players themselves talking about it, the younger players saying how great it was to have a veteran like James Shields in there, you know, as these young Royals players are around and then, you know, hopefully more will keep coming at a steady pace, then, you know, there's nothing bad about having a veteran like that around who can kind of show them the ropes and teach them how to win, so to speak. So, you know, that's for whatever that's worth, it could be worth a little something for where the Royals are right now. It certainly can't hurt. So that's something.
Right. James Shields will turn 37 in December.
Okay, he's 36. So, oh wait, no, he's 36 right now. So,
yeah, still through 200 innings. So, you know, for whatever that's worth,
this day and age, even though his numbers aren't freakish, like that ability that he has to put up those kinds of numbers for that in terms of innings pitch for that long of a time frame, it's freakish. I mean, considering
there were only 13 players period who threw 200 innings last year.
Yeah, so. And he did it as a 36-year-old.
Yeah,
pretty crazy. So that's
fair play to him.
That's incredibly impressive. So I think that's all we have for this week, and then 2 weeks from now, with our next show, we're going to dive a little bit because everyone's still kind of releasing from the end of the season. And then, you know, now it'll be after another couple weeks, things will be starting to point more towards all the offseason moves. We're going to start hearing more about free agency and the big free agent moves and et cetera, et cetera. So
there'll be some 40-man moves to contract tendering and protecting for the Rule 5 and all that fun stuff.
People are going to start asking the Royals and talking to them about what they're doing for the offseason and what their plans are and stuff, and we'll start hearing more from the people in the know about what they're, you know, what the Royals plan on doing or what the rumors are that they might be doing. So we'll be able to talk about that a little bit more next show, as well as have some specific players in mind to kind of target. We kind of did something like that last year where we talked about who we would want them to target and who we think they might target, et cetera. So I don't know if we'll do it next show, but we'll certainly do it this offseason where we'll have something like that. Next show might be the best time to do it. So we'll kind of see. But we'll be back then. And if you're craving more news or something big with the roster or with the Royals in general happens in between now and then, be sure to check our sponsor, BP Kansas City, because the writing team over at BPKC don't stop, off-season or no, keep pumping out content. So be sure to go check over there any of the fall leagues or winter leagues or any of that kind of stuff that's happening. Clint Scholes is tuned into that like nobody's business. So he'll have you updated on that stuff. If you want to know a little bit about how some of the younger players are doing in any of those leagues, he'll definitely have updates for you on that. And of course, anything the Royals do, we'll have covered extensively. And then as we, our season might be officially done now for everyone, but still football season and basketball season. Well, it's already started for the NBA, but for college basketball season is right around the corner. And as I know that you know, Mike, but the Kansas Jayhawks are the preseason number one team in the country. So I'm just excited that they still have a basketball team at this point.
Right, there's that. Yeah
we'll see. This whole now. Season is going to be – it's going to feel weird because – I don't know what's going
to be.
Happen.
Oh, we won. Do we have to get that one back later?
Yeah, I don't know what's going to happen. They're holding Silvio De Sousa out of competition until this thing is figured out by the NCAA. And that's what they said about Billy Preston last year, and he never ended up playing. So who the hell knows what's going to happen? I got no clue. I mean, unless KU is really confident, I just assume they just cut ties with De Sousa and just move on. I mean, I don't know. There was just so much trouble with Preston last year, but regardless, it's not a KU basketball podcast. So,
nope.
But if it was, we would have plenty to talk about there. But anyway, the point of that is football, basketball. If you want to watch any of those things, you can definitely do it at our wonderful sponsor, Kelly's Westport Inn. And with the colder, chilly weather that's happening, don't forget they have a heated rooftop that you can go up and have a great time on. That's where Mike and I watched the Game 7 of 2014 World Series with many
friends. Yeah.
So, not exactly the best memory, but it was fun up until the very end. So
yeah, it was almost a really cool memory.
It was almost one of the best memories ever for sports, but I'll take it. We were also up there after the Royals won, beat the Blue Jays in the ALCS. There to celebrate. Dave Lesky was there. That was even more fun time. So, Chiefs are doing really well. KU's the number one team in the country. Lots of good sports are going to happen in the next couple months. And no better place to watch it than Kelly. So if you're in Westport, you want to watch some sports, or you just want to have a couple drinks, have a good time, definitely go there. So with that, we will leave you. We'll see you again in 2 weeks, where the stove will be heating up, and we'll have a lot more to talk about for free agency and what it means for the Royals down the line. So until then, thank you all so much for stopping by. We'll see you next time. And as always, go Royals.
Thank you for listening to the Kansas City Baseball Vault. You can follow us on Twitter at KC Baseball Vault. You can also find us on Baseball Prospectus Kansas City at bpkansascity.com. You can follow BPKC on Twitter at bprokansascity. Also, you can subscribe to the podcast through iTunes, through Stitcher, or whatever podcast app you like. And if you have any questions, comments, or if you just want to say hi, send those emails to KansasCityBaseballVault@gmail.com.